SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Enough. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Hour two at the races, and John White joining us this morning. Talked a little bit quickly about the Wicker result from Sunday and the immediate aftermath, the consternation. It doesn't matter. Doesn't matter if it's a takedown or if a horse stays up. Obviously, there's going to be people supporting both sides of a steward decision, but John White, always helpful in these settings because he sits in the steward stand and makes some of those calls, and he knows what he's looking at. John, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. I did not envy the stewards for that one. I thought that was an extremely tough call, really tough. And during the time that the stewards were looking at it, which, you know, California, by the way, was the first jurisdiction to show what the stewards were looking at during an inquiry. That had not been done before. California blazed the trail in that front. Now that's done practically everywhere. But while I was watching it, you know, like you say, Steve, when you watch that head on, I mean, boy, your instinct is to take that horse down. But the more you kind of sink your teeth into it, I can certainly see why they left him up. So it was a really close call. I will say that my general philosophy is, in a close call like that, it's better to let the race be decided on the track than in the steward stand. So my vote would have been for no change, but without, it would have been one of the tougher calls I've ever would have been involved with, I feel, and I certainly can understand why people feel that the winner should have come down. It's not like they're crazy to think that. The only thing that kind of sticks in my craw a little bit is I can go back to that San Felipe earlier this year when McKenzie got his number taken down for drifting out and a bump close to the finish. And McKenzie got interfered with, in my opinion, turning for home, which the stewards felt was inconclusive, but I didn't feel that was inconclusive. I felt McKenzie got fouled, and then, okay, so he drifted out and had a foul. I thought that was offsetting penalties, in my opinion. But the fact that this one didn't get taken down for drifting way out here on this same circuit, and I think a big key here is that the contact was so close to the finish. If the contact had happened earlier, I would have been maybe more inclined to take the number down. But on the other hand, you know, I feel like when you're trying to pass somebody and they're carrying you out to the grandstand, that's a pretty tough deal too. So I feel for the people that bet on the runner-up. I feel for the connections of the runner-up. They certainly have a right to feel like they should have been put up. They're not crazy to have that opinion. I felt like the pan, you know, Pratt just, he kept riding, and I, you know, that was part of the deal with the McKenzie situation, was that Castellano kept riding all the way to the finish, in my opinion, in the San Felipe. And I think there was a time back in the day that I know in my early steward days, stewards used to look at more whether a horse, in terms of being interfered with, breaks stride or the rider stops riding. And I didn't really see, well, Pratt stopped riding or where the horse broke stride. So then you say, well, where's the interference? So, but like I say, by the same token, I know if I'm driving down the freeway and some guy's in the lane to my left and he starts drifting out and I keep having to drift away from him to keep away from him, and we're, you know, if we were in a race, I wouldn't like that very much. So it was just, you could go back and forth on this, back and forth, back and forth. But to me, if you're going to do a back and forth, it's better to let it just be decided on the track.
The herding portion, I mean, there's two elements when you get, you know, the opportunity to watch it head on, and there's no doubt that Stevens is coming out about a path, maybe a path and a half, and you don't necessarily, it doesn't feel egregious like we see sometimes on the turn where, you know, you mentioned Castellano, and we can also bring up a guy like Kent DeSormo, and they do it as a riding tactic, and it's they're doing it in a place where they invariably can get away with it. The turn is and off the turn is a great spot to hurt a horse and push them and make them, you know, go longer. In the stretch, you know, you can at least see, you know, what's, you know, what is going on here. And I also would fold in that scant contact right at the wire. I mean, it comes right at the end, and you also see Pratt, it leans to his left as well. I mean, he and maybe that, to some degree, you know, the stewards see that, and they say, well, you know, Pratt's race riding, and they're, the two of them are, you know, going headlong to the wire. It's a hard one, and I somebody asked me online, and, you know, and I called it a 50-50 call, and I wouldn't argue against, you know, either side of it.
It seems like you can't have a Del Mar meet without some kind of controversy.
Oh, yeah.
In terms of,
well,
the
not just Del Mar.
Almost, that's almost an annual tradition there. I mean, the most controversial race I ever saw, and I called the chart for the racing form, was the Tight Spot Derby, and the stewards disqualified Tight Spot, and I'm in the minority of the public in that I felt it was a good call. I mean, and if you read my footnote, I mean, Pink Eye from the outside post came over and never really had clearance, and it's the roughest race I ever saw. I mean, Randy Romero almost got put over the inside rail, and In Excess was in that race, and a horse called Pearl for Sure was right next to Tight Spot, and the key element to me is... Pink Eye, right after the race, he was quoted as saying, well, I thought I was clear, which wasn't Pink Eye's strongest statement of innocence I've ever seen. But then after he kind of, this thing became a controversy, that he was, I think people were telling him, what you need to say is you were following Pro for Sure over, you know, in terms of, and say, blame it on Pro for Sure and say, hey, I'm on the outside. If you know, that horse, I'm just... coming over as he's coming over, so don't blame me. And that's fine if you would have ever seen increased space between Tight Spot and Pro for Sure, but there never was. It's not one of those deals where Pro for Sure started to veer left and then Tight Spot followed him over. I actually testified on behalf of the stewards at not the first hearing in which the stewards were reversed, but in the second hearing. And because it had to be reheard, because the connections of It's All Greek to Me had not been notified of the first hearing, so they had to rehear it. And I was, in fact, Hubert Jones is one of the three stewards, came over to me after I testified and said, thank you very much. It was interesting, the lawyer for Vern Winchell, who owned Tight Spot, when I got on the stand and they were showing the race, and he says, Mr. Wright, who's this horse? And I said, well, that's Tight Spot. Who's this horse? I said, Pro for Sure. Who's this horse? I said, NXS. And they run the tape a little while, and he goes, okay, who's this? And I said, well, that's Tight Spot. And he goes, who's this? I said, that's Pro for Sure. And he goes, who's this? I said, that's NXS. And they go a little further, and he's saying, what do you see? And I said, well, sir, could you take this back to the beginning and just run it at normal speed? And he says, yes, we can do that. And they did that. And I said, do you see this horse starting in the outside post? Now watch as he's angling over. Do you see there's never any increased space between him and the horse to his immediate left in Pro for Sure? And now you see most of the field is severely interfered with. That Charlie Whittingham has called this the roughest race he ever saw. It's the roughest race I ever saw in my entire life. Somebody caused this, and as far as I'm concerned, that's the culprit right there. And I put my finger right on Tight Spot, and I said, that is the horse that caused the problems in this race. And the lawyer goes, no further questions. But they did not. The hearing officer wasn't going to overrule himself, since he'd already ruled that to reverse the decision, which I've never been a fan of. I mean, that then the bettors get screwed, because the people that the bet tight spot, they have no relief. So I like it when, I mean, you can't appeal these. You get before commissioners and judges and so forth that have very little, if and usually zero, experience in film analysis in terms of analyzing races and so forth. So, but like I say, you practically can't have a Del Mar meet without controversy in terms of the stewards. And it's but the nice thing is this widened turf course at Del Mar is a lot nicer, and they're going to have a lot less problems on that turf course than they have in the past, I think.
Well, John, enough of the non-DQ. Let's talk
me add, though, I'm sure Manny Yacaz is looking down from heaven saying, my gosh, when horses can veer out that many paths and not get your number taken down, boy, did I come along in the wrong era.
Well, and certainly we've had those discussions where, you know, it is a different environment for riders. And more, it seems, the interplay and the stewardship by the stewards of the jock's room. And, you know, we've had this discussion with Tony and Rich Migliori and others, the way, you know, film patrol, you know, they used to sit down with the riders and you know, ask them, what were you thinking here? And, you know, really try to, you know, to help them make better decisions in some cases and, you know, alleviate, you know, some of the potential for incidents. I mean, that, you know, that's a part of it too, that doesn't seem as not to say that, you know, the stewards are and the administration racing officialdom is laissez-faire, but it doesn't seem like we've got that same authority that provides a more of a steady hand on the wheel. I mean, I'll suggest that. John, the racing at Del Mar, 5 days in the book, and let's get a feel from what you've been playing, what your impressions were, and certainly, you know, certain names are dominating the early portion of the meet.
Well, obviously very impressive was Catalina Cruiser. I mean, this is a rags to riches colt, a giant of a thoroughbred that with a beautiful pedigree and just a gorgeous individual, and obviously he's had his physical issues, considering he's only made 3 lifetime starts and he's a 4-year-old. But boy, talk about rising through the ranks. He goes from the maiden win and then comes off a layoff and gets the allowance win at Santa Anita, both sprinting, and then stretches out to a mile on the 16th and absolutely crushes Dr. Dorr. And I mean, Dr. Dorr's not chopped liver, and I mean, he made him just look like chopped liver. And, you know, when you have him in the barn along with Accelerate, that certainly is great for John Sadler and one of my favorite owners in Costa Ronas, who I think has just done so much for this game, and I'm such a huge fan of his. And so it looks to me like Accelerate, they'll go forward. I mean, I know you were saying you'd like to see him in the Whitney, but my guess would be that we'll see Accelerate in the Pacific Classic. That's going to be a golden opportunity for him, as he finished 3rd in that race last year behind Collected and Arrogate. And Accelerate, a horse that once was considered to be shaky going beyond a mile and an eighth, he's got mile and a quarter grade one wins under his belt this year in the Santa Anita Handicap and the Gold Cup at Santa Anita. So I'm beginning to think a mile and a quarter is not a worry for him, but maybe a strength. I mean, and he won both the Big Cap and the Gold Cup with authority. So this looking at lucky 5-year-old is certainly, I think, going to be ultra tough in the Pacific Classic if that's where he goes. And I just don't see him shipping across the country. By the way, we're in a excessive heat warning here today in the Santa Anita area. are supposed to hit 104 today, 105 tomorrow, and maybe even higher. So we're in the sweltering mode right here, which that's for the people down at Del Mar. That's certainly the place to be rather than here in this Arcadia area. But this Catalina Cruiser, he's a very intriguing horse. I kind of get the feeling that maybe you'll see him in the Awesome again, as I think John Sadler is not real eager to stretch him to a mile and a quarter so quickly off of just three starts. He made the comment that we're not like Arrogate going for the Kentucky Derby at this point, meaning the Pacific Classic is not the Kentucky Derby. And that's, you know, I think the right approach here, that with Catalina Cruiser, you want to not go too boldly. I mean, it was pretty bold enough just to go in the San Diego here. So, you know, give them a little time and maybe go in the Awesome again. And the other thing about Accelerate, I mean, it doesn't make a lot of sense to back them up off the mile and a quarter. They could do it. I mean, it's no real problem. But it kind of makes more sense to me for Accelerate to go from a mile and a quarter in the Gold Cup to a mile and a quarter in the Pacific Classic. So that's part of the reasoning why I think that's how that's going to unfold.
As you mentioned, you know, John Sadler joined us yesterday, and then later in the afternoon seemed to crystallize the thinking when it came to, you know, what he was going to do with Accelerate. I was absolutely advocating for a visit to Saratoga for him.
I can't blame you.
Yeah,
although you're going to get
fun.
Pavel.
Well, Pavel, he'll go anywhere at a drop of a hat.
That's true.
He's ready. You know, they'll put him on a plane, on a boat, on a train. I was impressed. In fact, I watched the Catalina Cruiser race again, and it's interesting how this race has become, you know, one of those at this point a little bit of a bellwether. You know, about emergent, we'll see about emergent handicap horses, and for Costa and the Arona's team and Sadler, obviously a not that it was a bait and switch, John, but it kind of surprised people how, you know, how quick it all kind of came together. I mean, it was one of those scenarios where when the word spread that Accelerate was coming out, and I looked back at Accelerate or looked back at Catalina Cruiser in the PPs in those two sprint races, I said, well, this horse is going to wire this field now. I mean, this was a pretty masterful stroke by Aronis and Sadler.
It really was, and, you know, Curlin Rules is one that I think they're thinking about maybe the Long Acres Mile for him, so that's kind of exciting to me to always hear that race thrown out there, because that's my favorite race. That was the big race in my part of the country when I was growing up, and speaking of the San Diego being a bellwether, in 1986 when I was with the Racing Forum, a colt by the name of Skywalker with Lafitte Pinkai Jr. aboard won the San Diego, and Mike Whittingham, the trainer, came up to the roof to get a tape of the race, and I said to Mike, hey, congratulations for that San Diego. What are you going to do with them next? And he says, well, I'm going to send them up to the Long Acres Mile. And I said to Mike, I said, wow, that's great. I said, you know, that's where I'm from, that area. And I said, have you ever been to Long Acres? And he said, no. And I said, oh, you'll love it. I said, your dad trained there early in his career, and it's a beautiful track, and they're going to treat you like a king. And I mean, that's just fantastic. And he says, well, I'll tell you what. He says, why don't you come up with us? He says, we're going to charter a plane, and it's going to be me, the exercise rider, and the groom, and that's it. And I said, well, let me look into it. And the form wouldn't let me off on Saturday, but they said if you can find somebody to replace you, you can get off Sunday and Monday. In those days, Del Mar raced on Monday. So I did get Mark Ratzke to fill in for me on Sunday and Monday, and flew up from San Diego to Seattle on Sunday, and my father and my brother drove over from Spokane, which is I can tell you how far it was from my back porch to Long Acres, 276 miles, because I drove that 8 billion times when I was young, before our days of simulcasting and computer wagering and phone wagering and so forth. I mean, I used to do that in one day, 276 miles over, 276 miles back, and that's a long drive if you've had a bad day at the track and you got drilled. But so my dad picks me up at SeaTac, Seattle-Tacoma Airport there, and we spend the day at the track, and I was able to fly back with Skywalker after the race. He won it by a neck over a horse called Bedside Promise, who had Chris Losa at the board. And Skywalker would go on to win the 1986 Breeders' Cup Classic, which I called that chart for the racing form. That was the first Breeders' Cup charts I called, was the 1986. And that was an important race because Lady Secret was vying for Horse of the Year with Precisionist and Turco Man. And if either Turco Man or Precisionist had won the Breeders' Cup Classic, they would have been Horse of the Year. But when Skywalker upset the race, that opened the door for Lady Secret to get the Horse of the Year title that year. And Mike Whittingham came up with one of my favorite post-race comments I ever had after the Long Acres Mile in 1986, when Skywalker won by only a neck as the 3-5 favorite. And the newspaper people were interviewing him, and they said, well, what are your thoughts on the race? And he says, I'm more relieved than anything. He says, with a 3-5 favorite, I think they would have hung me from the Space Needle if I'd lost this race. And I thought, I love that comment. I thought, you know, I think they would have hung me from the Space Needle. Another Long Acres Mile was when Bobby Frankel won it in the 1970s. I wasn't there at the time. I was just a kid, but I had a lot of people in the media tell me this story when I started working at Long Acres in the 1970s. And Frankel sends a horse up there called U Whippy, who was by Dr. Fager. And he wins the race, and Frankel was in a T-shirt and jeans, you know, back in the day when no trainers, you know, trainers almost always wore a suit and tie, and here's Frankel, you know, with long hair and a T-shirt and jeans, and after the race, the media is in the winner's circle, and they're saying, are you Bobby Frankel? And they said, no. Are you Bobby Frankel? And they said, no. Are you Bobby Frankel? And they said, he's over at the concession stand. So, like, 10 members of the media go traipsing out of the winner's circle over to this concession stand where Frankel was drinking a soft drink, and they're interviewing the winner of the biggest race in that part of the country at this concession stand after the race.
Yeah, that's Bobby. There's some great pictures.
Bobby. That's exactly right.
There's a bunch of the pictures that I put up from Pimlico, and there's one of him, and he's wearing bell bottoms and a kind of a Western shirt, leaning against the rail over by the stakes barn. And
I know he'd be so proud of what Chad Brown is doing, because my goodness, what Chad Brown is doing is absolutely tremendous. By the way, speaking of the Northwest, I did want to duck in that they had their Washington Oaks up there. They're having a really good meet at Emerald Downs this year. And Princess of the Nile, who is a daughter of the sire of the Triple Crown winner, American Pharoah, was an eight-length winner of the Washington Oaks for trainer Mike Pewich, and was really an impressive win for this filly, who had raced at Oaklawn Park and at Churchill Downs earlier this year. And this filly really put it together in this mile and an eighth, Washington Oaks. She's a daughter of Pioneer of the Nile out of a Bernardini mare. You don't get a pedigree much better than that. And this filly really just crushed that field to win by eight lengths. So that was a really impressive performance, I thought, for Princess of the Nile. Mike Pewich, his father was a longtime jockey agent up in the Northwest.
Sure.
And was, in fact, the agent for Larry Pierce. And Pierce was a very dominant rider at Long Acres and was the regular rider of my all-time favorite horse, Turbulator. So Mike Pewich and I are friends just from our connection with Turbulator. But, of course, Mike Pewich's father was brothers with the Ivan Pewich, who passed away not too long ago here in Southern California.
No. Yep. Well, John, we're off to a good start on the West Coast, and I'm glad you mentioned that spot. I've got a few of those kinds of results around the country, including at a little stake at Gulfstream.
By the way, you were talking about three-year-olds in the sofa, which I like that phrase. And while you were saying that, practically at the same time, popping into my computer was a workout, and the first workout in quite a while for Principe Guillerme, who was so impressive earlier this year for Steve Aspison. And Principe Guillerme with a workout this morning. He hasn't raced since the winter back there at the fairgrounds when he ran in the Risen Star against the likes of Bravazo, who won that race, and Instilled Regard was the favorite in that race. But, you know, at one time, Principe Guillerme was very prominent in thinking for the Kentucky Derby, and so he's one that's going to come out of the sofa at some point. And I'm looking forward to McKenzie. You know, that's one that's kind of slipped through the cracks, been forgotten a little bit, but when I was over to see Justify a few weeks ago, I did get a look at McKenzie and actually asked Baffert about him, and he said, man, he looks great, he's doing well. I wouldn't be surprised to see McKenzie maybe pop up with a workout here pretty quick. And I think a race that they kind of have in mind for McKenzie to possibly be able to make is that Pennsylvania Derby. So I think that would maybe be a good spot for him, but we'll see. But, you know, a lot of talent there with that McKenzie. Bob Baffert was extremely high on him, and then, of course, McKenzie got hurt. And then all of a sudden, here's Justify. And, of course, that's the other thing we're waiting for is any further news on Justify.
Now, not encouraging.
Not encouraging at all. No.
We'll hold out hope until word comes. John, I appreciate it. We'll catch up next week with the first full week of racing in the books at both Saratoga and Del Mar. John White, everybody. Post Time John on Twitter. Take a break here. We'll come back. Going to have Dick Powell join us. We'll get some impressions from Dick about the start of the Saratoga meet. Saw Dick on Saturday and spent a few minutes in the clubhouse with him. And we'll also get our glance at Presque. And, of course, today, Tuesday, the assortment of some of the offbeat circuits and Presque, the 5:30 start. But all eyes 2 hours later at Fort Erie for the Prince of Wales. 7:38 post time for the second leg of the Canadian Triple Crown. Wonder Gadot looking to be a dual classic winner before she sets her sights on Saratoga and the Alabama for Gary Barber. Back after this, Dick Powell. Top of the hour, I'm going to have to leave you. I've got an appointment, but we're going to give you a wonderful conversation that, if you didn't hear it, it'd be new to you. Tommy Trotter. And Tommy going to miss the roundtable this year. It took a fall. He's okay, but he did get a little hairline fracture. And so he's a little hobbled and not making the trip to Saratoga, but you'll hear from him anyway. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
The thoroughbred breeding industry will never be the same with the launch of Daily Racing Form's Buyer-Sire Performance Standings, presented by Darley. These groundbreaking ratings use buyer speed figures to measure a stallion's performance beyond wins and earnings, focusing on providing a measurement of a sire's true ability to produce high-quality horses. View the Buyer-Sire Performance Standings at drf.com/buyer-sire and get the true information that breeds results. That's drf.com/buyer-sire.
Cole Ranch has the facility and the expert personnel to get your yearlings started correctly right here in California. Hi, this is Steve Cole. We have a variety of round pens, a huge outdoor arena, as well as a meticulously maintained 5/8 mile training track with rails and a 4-horse starting gate. Your horse will be given the utmost in care and attention. We employ only patience and kindness and scrupulously avoid cowboy training methods that rely on fear and deprivation. We also have numerous irrigated turnouts when your horse needs a break from the rigors of training. So give me a call at 805-990-3669 or visit our website. At Cole Ranch, we don't break racehorses. We build racehorses.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Back at the races, about 15 to the top of the hour, and reaching for Dick Powell, and wanted to get some of Dick's early thoughts about the meet, some early thoughts about tomorrow's pick six sequence, and as we wait for Dick, and I'll tell you now, this is not going to be easy, and depending on what happens weather-wise, that will go a long way. Sun comes out, it goes away, it thunderstorm, you just don't know right now. And it yesterday was one thing, but there's you know, something of a dodgy forecast, you know, for several of the next few days. And so hard to know if we'll be all right for turf. The sequence does include the 7th and 8th that offer one on the inner starter allowance, 7th, and a state bred second level allowance going a mile and a 16th on the melon. Remember, you're a melon. And then the nightcap on the inner mile and a 16th for maiden 40. So we'll see if we can hold these together. And things starts with a 5.5 furlong state bred maiden group, and it's really a bit of a mystery train. You've got, you know, only the Michelle Nevin that has had a start. And that's a Bustin Stones that took some money in the debut downstate. That was on June 14th and went off at 5-1. And it kind of went around. Has worked since and worked just kind of easy since then. So does own some experience versus the other nine that are all first-time starters. And you know, for that, you got to look at the work tab and look at some trainer stats. Dick Powell joins us now. And Dick, when it comes to a race like this, here's just a straightforward handicapping question. When it comes to this kind of a race where virtually everybody but one is a first-time starter, what are your earmarks for separating a field?
I'm a brisk guy, so I'm looking at trainer stats and pedigree stats. So some are better than others. I kind of know the numbers, so I know when it doesn't sound like 14 is that much greater than 10, but it really is. So if a train is 14% first out, that's better than 10, and it's actually betting wise substantially better than 10. And then I'll look up the pedigrees. I'll look up the dam. I always like to see what the dam did as a racehorse. We can always figure out what she's done as a broodmare, but I want to see what she did on the track, whether she had any affinities for turf, sprinting, wet tracks. As we saw yesterday, Frank Miramati was making this compelling case for the 10 horse. I think it was the 10 horse in the last race, and how the dam had done all this winning on wet tracks. And just, he was absolutely right. And then they turn foam and she decides to bolt. And that was the end of the research. But here's the thing, Steve. For me, it's dangerous because this is where you can over-handicap. And over-handicapping is not a positive outcome. So
this group does include Maya Engelhart, whose horse is almost always are ready to run and are competitive. And, of course, you had the Fixed Income Larry brother over the weekend for Al Gold, run very well behind Nitrous. So, you know, that gives you something to lean on. We're going to have to put a call in before tomorrow because Richie Vega is coming to town with a Philly-based, and there's every possibility that Tony Black has been on Collegeville Girl, a central banker that the very good New York breeder, Andy Bednall, out of a Vindication mare, and Collegeville Girl shows up in town and brings Castillo with her. And I'm gonna find out for everybody from Tony what we can glean from this filly who's Philly based.
But like you were saying before, I mean, yesterday there was a point where it was raining in the paddock and it wasn't raining out in the
track. I know. That was unbelievable. That happened Sunday too.
And I wrote about it before the meet started, and I said no matter what weather forecast you have, and even looking at the radar for Sunday looked like a snowstorm coming up the coast. And yet you could see, boy, some of this might go to the east and some of this might go to the west. And that's what happened. So we dodged that bullet on Sunday. Then yesterday it was already pouring rain in the morning, so there was no dodging bullets. Then when it looked like the afternoon might at least clear up and be nice, then those crazy scattered storms come in. So if you're out of town, you're trying to figure out what the track's going to be like. Well, obviously you got to tune in the track feed to see what the latest information is. But if you go on the radar and weather forecasts and stuff like that, it's hit and miss because it can rain here and be dry at the track and vice versa and the same way you are. And just so yesterday was just the typical Saratoga summer day.
Very much. Well, Dick, just about 7-8 minutes. I've got to head for an appointment, but a quick survey. Any Saratoga thoughts to offer? And then the glance at Presque.
I've enjoyed the start of Saratoga. I've been really, I kind of been on Castellano because he only had 28 wins last meet, and that's way below his normal. So he's come out riding with a vengeance, and he has 8 wins already. Johnny and Todd have sent out a couple of winners at nice odds, including Watterson. So Let's Go Stables, and that 2-year-old turf horse breaking from post 10 that just gunned to the front and won the race right at the start.
See now.
So, yeah, so that's gone very well. You know, now it gets tough because track conditions are changing. The first couple days, the main track was blazing fast. I mean, 120 and change for 7 and 40 claimants going 115 flat for 6.5. That was slowed down yesterday with the rain. We'll see how the rain affects the track the rest of the week. He has to keep it sealed in between, so the rain won't really be getting into it. But the worst thing is when they have rain during racing and then the track is open and it's taken on that moisture. That's tough situation. So that's all been, hey, I've it seemed like the track's open a month, not 4 days, but it's been a good month.
Very much. Well, let's spend 5 minutes before we jump and get some thoughts from you about what we talked about last week and Presque Isle Downs, of course, the feature. Today, Tuesday racing, but I think sharing the spotlight later in the evening with Fort Erie and the Prince of Wales.
Yeah, I'm going to have to pay attention to that later on. Presque Isle, Pablo continues to dominate the rider standings. And one thing I noticed, he's already over $1 million in earnings just at the Presque Isle meet alone. Gallardo is second. But as we said, Gallardo rides Monmouth a couple of days, so he's not here 5 days a week. Teresa Connolly has a one-win lead over Jerry Brooks. They look like they're going to battle right to the wire like they did last year. Ron Potts has 17, and that's only with 55 starters. So Ron Potts is bringing in 31% winners. He's certainly one to watch. Jerry Brooks, high percentage. Glenn Wismer is winning 28%. He has 16 wins. And you know, Steve, it's really like any other track. You take the top, I wouldn't say 10, take your top 8 trainers, top 8 jockeys, throw out the first 4, and the money is with the next 4. Because they tend to get underbet, and the top 4 tend to get overbet. And a lot of it is the same at Presque Isle. So the guys like Potts and some of the people a little bit farther down the list, they win races, and when they win, they tend to pay well. I got beat the other night. I like Erin Walker, and she beat me twice. She swept the late double. I think it was Sunday. I ran second both times. Didn't use her both times. So Erin's riding well, and she always does at Presque. I got off to a slow start this year, but she's coming on. Tonight, I got some, I don't know what you want to call them, trainer jockey angles. Race 2, number 7, Dance or Stroll. Jerry Brooks is the trainer here, and he uses Eddie Dominguez. And Eddie Dominguez is having a real sneaky good meet, and he wins 36% riding for Jerry Brooks. So that's a big trainer jock angle. It's a horse for course. Had won 3 straight before running 3rd last time out. They drop her in class off of that effort. She's 3-1 morning line. I don't know if we'll get that, but still, if you're starting out with a double or something like that, pick 3, she could be a nice single for you in race number 2. And then race 4, it's a long sprint, 6.5 furlongs. Honest Ginger is also Jerry Brooks, this time Louis Garcia. And Louis wins 24% riding for Brooks. He's only a 10% rider this year. So that's a big money move for Louis Garcia, 24%. And that's from 25 starters that he's had with Brooks. It's a Drosselmeyer, woke up last time out going 2 turns on a Tapita, comes back going 6.5, but drops down in class, and I like that move, and maybe we can run these down in the stretch. So plays for tonight, race 2, number 7, race 4, number 5.
Very nice. Well, Deck, we start the old-fashioned portion of Saratoga tomorrow. We got the 6-week run, and hope the weather holds form, and looking forward. I was glad to see you early in the meet. I think last year, I think I went the closing week before I saw you.
I think it was. Yeah.
It was crazy. So we got an early Dickie sighting. I love it.
On twinspires.com, I'm writing a daily diary in their blog section. So every night there's a wrap-up
awesome
of the races and things like that. And it makes it kind of busy at the end of the day. I was like, oh, gee, I got to do some work. But
all right.
I enjoy it. I'm not complaining.
No, you enjoy it immensely. And, you know, you're particularly good at tracking the vagaries of the turf rail placements and the way the turf courses are offering up either bias one way or another, and yep, always helpful for people that are going to look for bet backs. It's certainly a big part, and I think we've already got, you know, some early opportunities on that front. So we'll continue to monitor some Saratoga as we discuss everything out in Erie at Presque Isle Downs. Dick Powell, everybody. Thanks.
Thanks, Dave.
Dick Powell.
Let's send you out into hour three. I've got to take leave, and you're going to hear from Tommy Trotter, conversation that I hope will be fresh to a lot of you. And Tommy, one of our absolute favorite people in the game and in the game's history. And you know, one other conversation that's coming up later this week, Mike Lakow. We're going to get Mike back on. And with all the conversations, it's very funny, actually, all the conversations we've had with Mike Lakow over the years, and, you know, always think of Lakow from his, you know, from his origins at NYRA as racing secretary. And I talked to Lakow in every capacity that he's been involved with since leaving New York the first time and coming back now, and so looking forward to that. But Tommy Trotter predated Mike Lakow by about 40 years, and Trotter, just a fascinating gentleman of the first order, and you'll enjoy this. You'll hear historic portions of the game from Tommy, and I hope you enjoyed this conversation with him, and we will talk to you tomorrow morning live as week two, first full week of Saratoga commences. Thanks, everybody.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
The thoroughbred breeding industry will never be the same with the launch of Daily Racing Form's Buyer-Sire Performance Standings, presented by Darley. These groundbreaking ratings use buyer speed figures to measure a stallion's performance beyond wins and earnings, focusing on providing a measurement of a sire's true ability to produce high-quality horses. View the Buyer-Sire Performance Standings at drf.com/buyer-sire and get the true information that breeds results. That's drf.com/buyer-sire.
Cole Ranch has the facility and the expert personnel to get your yearlings started correctly right here in California. Hi, this is Steve Cole. We have a variety of round pens, a huge outdoor arena, as well as a meticulously maintained 5/8 mile training track with rails and a 4-horse starting gate. Your horse will be given the utmost in care and attention. We employ only patience and kindness and scrupulously avoid cowboy training methods that rely on fear and deprivation. We also have numerous irrigated turnouts when your horse needs a break from the rigors of training. So give me a call at 805-990-3669 or visit our website. At Cole Ranch, we don't break racehorses, we build racehorses.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.